views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Are you ready to thrive? It is time to take action. Hello, everyone. This is Jen, and you are listening to Thrive by Jen Radio on Transformation Talk Radio. What is the result of thriving? Body confidence, mind fulfillment, and soul synchronicity. Tune in to hear about these elements and the scientifically and spiritually proven action steps to stand in confidence, love from within, be unstoppable in fulfilling your dreams, and create synchronicity so you can flow toward abundance and love. Hear real stories that will inspire you to take action today and be a catalyst for positive change in this world through creating your own Thrive life. Let's do this. Feel empowered and ignite your soul with Thrive by Jen Radio starting now.
Hey, welcome everybody to Thrive by Jen Radio on Transformation Talk Radio. It is Monday morning, which is my favorite day because I get to talk with all of you. And today I have a super special guest on, my good friend, Mr. Lonnie Holly. Lonnie, welcome. Thank you for being here with me.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me and having me as a guest on the show.
I am so... We are going to continue. Last week, I kicked off a series that I'd like to do to talk about bullying. And it all stemmed from me getting bullied on social media. And what I like to do is turn negatives into positives. And so I created this series. And I love Lonnie for multiple reasons. But one of the things that I love best about Lonnie is Lonnie always gives me... perspective, but an opportunity to see things differently and to really sit in myself and contemplate and have a thoughtful dialogue with myself about different topics. And why I thought it would be so great for Lonnie to be here today, because one, we're covering two controversial issues. We're going to talk about race bullying, and we're going to talk about religious bullying. And I want to kick it off, Lonnie. I'm going to throw this out here because both Lonnie and I agree that we were going to be very organic today and let the conversation go where it needed to go, but also leave our listeners with thought, with something for you to think about. Because part of dealing with bullying is seeing things from perspective. And that's what I'm going to throw out there to kick off the conversation is when I got bullied, and when I have been bullied in the past, because it's happened before, one of what I do is I look at perspective. I look at perspective from the person doing the bullying and my perspective of the situation and what's going on. So I'm just going to throw out the word perspective to you and to kind of kick this off. What are your thoughts? What do you want to start with?
Well, I appreciate the fact that that's the word we're starting with, because that to some degree sums up my thought process on so many things. I think one of the things that was recently one of the most stunning things for me was that I realized a lot of people actually use education as a leverage to only kind of tighten their perspective. Mm. So instead of kind of going into the world of wanting to know more from a place of being open, let's see where this goes, let's look at this from a larger picture. It was stunning to me when I realized that people actually had a bias and they went into education only to support their bias more deeply. And so in that way, it's some people may think like there's one way to look at it or two ways, possibly three. Everything I look at in life, I look at from 13 different perspectives at the same time. And so that's just kind of how, that's a pattern that I run, and it's just kind of how my brain works in the background. So everything that I see, I look at from this very, very broad scope, and it makes it easier for me to be able to see the world.
Can you share with us, because you and I have talked about that before, but I did not ask you about those 13 perspectives, which I'd like to hear about them, because I think it's a great, I want to learn more about seeing the world in a broader perspective.
Well, and I want to share this, and at the same time, I don't want to be overwhelming, because it's like a person who wrote a song, and they've been singing the song for years, and other people may just be hearing the song for the first time. And so what happens is the person singing can actually sing the song so fast that the lyrics are blur, but they hear everything perfectly because they've kind of sat with this for a while.
Sure.
Where other people, it can be, they're like, wait, what? I need to listen to that, you know, a lot more. So just kind of give you the basic layout. I come from a very spiritual and religious background. I was a minister for over 20 years. And so with that, I looked at certain things from the Bible, and I just kept seeing them over and over, over and over. I'm also a nurse, so I'm a pattern person. And so when I see somebody like Jacob and his 12 sons, when I see Jesus and his 12 disciples, when I look at something like the zodiac and then the person who's looking at the zodiac, I constantly saw this number 13 over and over and over. And so then I did a deep dive into the personality of each one of the disciples, and I realized that each one of them represented a very unique perspective as how you would see the world. So I gave them all B names to make it easier for myself. But after you sit with that so long, every time you see something, I see it fractioned into this prism of information. And so instead of just looking at things from one or two kind of like facets, I see it an array of things in front of me.
So you bring up such an important point, because from my training as well, from being biblical training, my belief is that that's where we stem from. So that's what's in our heart. That's what's at our core. So the fact that you saw that there's this many perspectives that was taught throughout the Bible, but not really highlighted, right? Because there are a lot of messages in the Bible, let's say, that are hidden, is too strong of a word, but you have to, right? You it's like Jesus's parables, right? Telling a story because he wants the people to get it who are meant to get it. And so those perspectives, though, you bring up a good point, because do you think that that's what's really in our hearts, like to see things in so many perspectives versus right now we're a society of it's your way, it's my way or the highway?
Well, I think two quick perspectives when you're looking at something like this, instead of taking it to that broad level, just kind of like on the easier end to digest. We have I did a study on what I call the anthropology of hate crimes throughout humanity. Mm-hmm. That study took me to a further study where I had to study the rise of humanity. Mm. In my study on the rise of humanity, I studied everything all the way back from the primordial ooze and the simple cell amoeba, all the way up to old world monkeys, bonobos, different types of human as we've fractioned into different components. And there are two main things that I found along the way. There was similar others. And then once you get to a group of similar others, there are nuances that people start employing within the group of similar others. Right. So now before you can get to that point, of course, you have those things that are different. And so let's say we go back, I don't know, 3,000 years. Right.
Right.
We as humans believe that we will live longer when we find ourselves among a group of similar others. And so that's the first thing that we do. That's the first, our first focus is to eliminate anything that looks different and to pull ourselves towards something that's closer to us.
Okay.
Now, once that happens, right, then your enemies, your friends, all of that is contained in a group of similar others. So someone from the outside looking in would be confused as to why you're fighting. And when you say my family versus this family, and 100 years ago, they did this to my uncle. And so now we're destined to fight that group. But the issue is it doesn't matter, because ultimately, let's say in this country or in any country on the globe, once you have eliminated everything that's different, then you begin to walk down a nuance of destroying similar others. So unless you get control of that pattern to fight and war within yourself, we'll war until there's nothing left.
And for our listeners, again, it's a good point, because what do we tend to do a lot of? Draw ourselves to like-minded people, right? So we're taking, and I want to highlight this for people so they understand a little bit more about bullying, and that you're surrounding yourself with everybody that agrees with you, right? There's no diversity. There's everybody looks like you, everybody acts like you. And like what Lonnie says is that's, and then who then do you then destroy? Then it's the competition amongst all of you. Right?
That is correct. And now what we start doing, if we're not careful, is we start labeling things. I'm kind of really, really excited about this subject. And at the same time, it can turn really dark, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, so, but for sure, yeah.
I'm excited about it because when we gain a head start, any group, anything that gains a head start, now they can kind of keep that head start if they manage things right. So even with knowledge, even with information, even with education, if we're not careful, we will clump ourselves with other individuals who are like-minded. Mm-hmm. And in that way, we begin to push other individuals to the brink, to the edge, and marginalize them, mm-hmm. not understanding that every time we do that, we weaken ourselves. Mm-hmm. So bullying there are so many different perspectives. Like there's so much in that, mm-hmm. Whether you're talking about a physical confrontation, whether we're talking about information, whether we're talking about being a world superpower with weaponry and things. We can align ourselves in such a way that we actually take away from us as an individual or as a country or as a group of people without even realizing it.
Absolutely. And Lonnie, we're going to skip break because I want to stay with this. So what's interesting is, and I'll give you a great example. So I was in a course, and it was religious based. It was Christianity based. And what was so interesting is they were talking about different levels. They called it levels of Christianity in the sense of where you are in your spiritual journey. And one of the levels was Christian mature, which meant in their definition was that you can accept where others are on their journey, and that's okay. And it just really struck me because I what I found so ironic about it was the person who created this course is also the same person that I had another course with that was hardcore. It's this way. And if you don't do it this way, you're going to hell. And so I just like, I had that moment of like, whew, like this is this, right? This craziness that happens in our brains and our hearts where we're living. Like, I feel like we have a toe, right? In each, everywhere. I know you get what I'm saying. So I'll let you.
I completely get what you're saying. And I'm going to say this to you, Jen. When you look at those 13 perspectives I'm talking about, there is one level that I call the boson. Oh, well, he, you know, in kind of my mental conversation, he expressed to me that his name is the boson. And we call the Higgs boson in quantum physics the God particle. And he told me he was the one that was kind of holding this all together. The part of the way I came up with this kind of 13 different perspectives, too, was when I was studying, I realized something the further back I went. Someone like Jesus, the Christ, right? And welcome to the Christ level, Jen, would have studied in a place like Egypt, right? And so in Egypt, the difference between the Pharaoh's kids and the rest of the people in the civilization was that the Pharaoh's children would have gone to university. Moses would have gone to university versus the other individuals who may have been able to speak three languages at most, right? So you have a blacksmith, you have a potter, you have a baker. You have the person who, a mason, you have all of these different people communicating, but how many bricks would it take for you to walk away with the hindquarter of a deer? And how many deer legs does it take for a house? Like the average person would have just taken their stuff to a place of universal financial exchange. They would not have been able to speak all of the languages of all of the different craftsmen. But the children of the Pharaoh would have been able to. They would have had enough information, and they had time, and they had finances. They had the grace, the wherewithal, the parenting. So then Pharaoh would have taken his son to the baker for a while to learn the language of baking, would have taken to the smith, would have taken that child to the carpenter. And so that individual would have been able to come out speaking what we in our today's term would say things like philosophy, psychology. They would have had world religion. They would have been able to maybe take a music appreciation class. I mean, everything that we call university. In this way, it broadens the thought process, the consciousness to be able to see more. And so a person like the instructor would tell you, yes, there's only one way to cook this bread because they're speaking from the facet of the baker. However, if you want to learn universal commerce, no. That person has to take you to the Christ level.
Right.
And so now there's the level of the individual. There's the level of cooperation. And then there's the perspective of the individual seeing all of that. So my question when I'm facing most people, as I look at them, I'm identifying which one of these perspectives they're coming from.
Right.
So a simple person, if I'm talking to them, because I was raised in a holiness background, a Pentecostal background, an evangelistic background, a charismatic background, non-denominational background. And so there is only one way. And if the woman doesn't cover her head and wear the little doily, she's going to hell. I mean, you go to hell for everything, Jen.
Right,
everything. Even questioning anything. And that's what I had to learn to do. That's one of the differences between how I developed and how the person who came out of the same womb that idea sitting next to me developed.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that person, you can't. Yeah. They're so confined, you can't really have a conversation.
Absolutely. But you're saying it perfectly, because now we can bring it into modern times, right? Now, modern times, right? People are talking, I'm going to make a broad statement here. People are thinking diversity, maybe black, white, but we're talking diversity where every level, education levels, backgrounds, environment, we are a United States of diversity. And it's exactly what you're saying. And we're running into the trouble now, right? Somebody who might have had, you know, a bachelor's degree and a master's degree and a doctorate, you're talking to someone who graduated high school and went onto the labor force. That was big in my family, graduating high school and going into labor force. You have to meet each other. And instead, right, we've become this, I feel like we've become this, you know, monster of attacking the other person and causing a lot of this turmoil versus meeting each other halfway.
Well, I read a book one time called Lessons for Tomorrow. And in that book, it breaks down exactly where education came from. It broke down the education system, not the universal education system, but here in America, that it was commissioned by the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, the Morgans. And so, and I've done some extensive study on some of their previous work before this book. But in this book, it tells you that at the turn of the century, with the Industrial Revolution, you have all of these different people from all of these different backgrounds. You have Italians, you have Irish, you have Mexicans, you have African Americans. You have all of these different people coming into the labor force, into the work pool. And so they have all of these different cultures and all of these different ways of doing things and all of these different words for the same thing. So high school was basically a training ground for the large industrial revolution complex. It was to teach you to work on the conveyor belt. It was to teach you when this bell rings, move from this station to this station. It was to teach you how to walk in and stay in a narrow space and to take most of your belongings and keep them in this locker. And so what they did was they promised the family where there was a single person working in the workforce and another person home, they said, you can have more success if both parents worked. Well, the parents, of course, are like, well, what do I do with little Billy? Well, you take Billy and you turn him over to the state. And in fact, if you don't turn him over to the state and he's not getting an education, that's criminal. And so we begin to turn our children over to be trained to go into this workforce. Mm-hmm. And some of them get a leg up by going into further education. But in the most likely case, education was really about getting a job. Mm-hmm. So you go for 4 more years, and when you get out, now you're just the manager at the factory instead of, I don't know, a widget maker at the factory. Right. And so in that way, yes, we've come to a place where now there are some people who say, because they've gone, they've had time to think and they've moved into a different intellectual place, they look and they say, you know, I can create my own business. I don't have to go into a workforce like this. But as you start creating those different nuances again, now you start creating opportunities for this little warfare that we do,
right,
with separating the group of who's different and similar others so that we can separate who's different so that, again, we can go to war.
Right, right. So I know this has happened to you. I know you have been in a perspective, let's call it love. Let's say you're talking to somebody and you are coming from a loving perspective. And we can talk more. I would like to talk more about what that means for our listeners. But then all of a sudden, the person whom you're having this conversation with goes into a fear-based attack mode, because that's what's happening, right? When you're talking about these little nuances, this competition, right? It's we want to eat the other person up. We want to take him out of the game, out of my way, right? You're coming from a fear-based place of the world that you've created, the bubble that you've created is getting threatened. Mm-hmm. So why do you think that's happened? Do you think it's just it's been learned? Why is it so? Because it's getting worse, right? It's getting, you and I can, I'm sure we can compare notes and have a conversation where in a week's time, you're under attack several times.
We have a need to put things in their place. We have a need to put a label on it. We have a need to put a title on it. We need ease of moving through our world, all right? So it's easier to walk into a room of 100 people and say, I need all of my PhDs to come to the front of the room. Those individuals who have a postgraduate degree, I need you. It doesn't matter what your degree is, what the field is. I just need you to come to this level. I need my people with my bachelor's degrees, those with associate degrees, those who don't have a degree but have a vocational skill. We need you in this place. Those of you who've graduated education, those of you who did not, it's easy to boom, 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 right? Then let's say we need further simplification. We can easily say, I need all of those from Mexican descent. I need all of those from African-American descent or African descent. I need all of those from a European descent. Now it's visual. Then it's easy to just kind of like look around the room and make this visual assessment. And here in America, This is the tough stuff. Those of lighter skin have been given certain advantages, right? And I know there's so many people, you have no idea, that would fight me on this thinking without understanding that I know what I'm, yeah. But I don't want to come from this superior place. But I'm looking and I'm saying they have been given certain advantages. So if we did call together a group like that and that group was called out, the system that created it knows what it's calling because it was the thing that gave the head start. Mm-hmm. So it knows that even without physically experiencing all of the advantages, it has given an advantage, mm-hmm, in such a way that I know I have it in this group.
For sure. For sure.
And then go ahead.
No. But you're right. And we have advantages that we know we have, but we're just going to kind of tuck them away and let them do their thing. But let's not talk about it.
So let's say, for instance, we're going to build a new country. All right. We're going to build us a new country. And as we do this, we're kind of taking over the space of those indigenous individuals that's already in that country, right? They have no rights. They have no privileges. They don't know how to read. They're illiterate. They are not educated. They are just simply savages. The first thing we're going to do is send out a few of our own war party to them to extend an olive branch, and we're going to call this group missionaries. If they accept what the missionaries have to say, boom, with inclusion. If they don't, that gives us the right to just wipe them out.
Sure.
The missionaries say, well, why should we go first? Well, yeah. Aren't you the closest to God? I mean, you're just going to go right back to him. So they go out, they meet these people. They're like, we don't want your bread. Boom, beheadings. Now we go in and we just completely take over. Now we need a labor force. And these people are not willing to do it. And we never know how hostile they are. But we need to be able to easily identify who is our slave class, who is our workforce class. isn't it easy if you just get someone that's completely like, you will know that just instantly, you know, that person shouldn't be here. Mm-hmm. That person should not be in this space having a drink. Mm-hmm. All right. That person should not be walking around town. Look at them. No shoes on, burlap sack for clothes. But we need to boost our numbers. So the same thing that's being touted right now has always been the way to give the advantage.
Yeah. And it's still going on.
Immigration, you open the throttle on the carburetor and you let so many Europeans in that you have a country like America with 325 million people here. And 300 million of those people are of European descent.
Right. So really white skin.
So how did that happen? It was somebody did that, right? And now in a place where we know that we are representative republic, and at the same time, being a democracy means the rule of the mob or the mob rules. But when you're faced with 300 million of 325 million, how would my vote ever really mean? I mean, it means something, but in the face of a flood of 300 million?
Right, right.
Somebody's kind of tipped the scale already.
Sure, sure. What can we do, Lonnie, on an individual basis? Just for our listeners, because I think what's important is one, I'd like to say one person at a time, but the problem's too big for that, right? But one person can make a difference. So what can our listeners do?
I think that we are going to first have to start with self-talk and belief. Mm. We're going to have to identify where we are, right? Mm. And this
I don't mean to interrupt, but you got to talk a little bit about that because that's tough, right? Because what that means is it is admitting, right? It's admitting that I can talk all I want that this bullying action happened to me, but I've bullied. I've done it, which is a hard thing to admit, you know? And when I went to, you know, when I went through my ministry training, there was that whole process is about admitting what not a good person I am. So it's very, so just talk a little bit about that because it's so important for people, for our listeners to understand, like that's part of the process. You have to take an inventory of your actions, of your behavior, of your beliefs, of your thoughts.
And that's being able to come from a place to understand basically that I'm all 13.
Mm. Mm. I love that.
I had to come to a place that I am all 13. Anywhere I go, I always tell, like, it's just the way I coach. Mm. With my coaching practice, when I have one of my clients come to me, I need for them to understand that I run the gamut. Mm-hmm. I run the spectrum, and they do too. So I speak to them from a spectrum kind of perspective. And if I have a client that can't get to that place, I release them so that they can go and find their coach.
Sure.
Because for me, if you speak of hell, I am the worm in the ashes of hell. I am the hottest burning ember in hell's fireplace. I am it. I am the lowest thing. I am the worst thing. You can't get, I will eat you. I will eat your corpse in hell. At the same time, the last little fluffy piece of precipitation in the highest cloud in heaven, that's me. I am the most godly, loving, kind person you've ever. Wait, I'm saying this from this this kind of mental space. I am a military medic. Mm-hmm. I am a U.S. Army trained medic. I am the guy that will come no matter what language you are speaking. In every movie, you never hear them in military movies, someone yell out, cook. Nobody yells out, gunner. No matter all they military movies of all time, they when they are calling out, they are calling me. And guess what?
You go.
I will respond with bullets raining in this direction instead of this direction. Sure. I am coming to get you. And when I come to get you, it's not me alone. The worst case scenario is going to surround anyone around you. And as a medic, the first thing I was trained to do was to stop the person producing more work for me. I'm not a lazy guy, but I'm not just gonna allow you to continue to make work.
Sure.
So because it's true, I know who I am. I know fully who I am. I am the person who needs this spiritual change. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I am the person that can, that is a catalyst for the spiritual change in another person.
Have you been able to take that moment, right, when you're rushing, you're in combat, you're rushing to somebody's aid, because in that moment, you're, and again, this is going back to labels, so we have to be, it's tricky. So you're a medic, however, you're, right, and the end objective is to, let's say, save that person. So there's no religion, there's no race, there's no gender, there's, right? You're a medic and I'm here to save you. How do you take that into the real world? Because I was having this conversation with my son last night. He was at a sporting event. He had a phenomenal game. And part of the issue was that he was exhausted. So he almost got to shut off his mind. He was out of his head. He was really in his body and performing like he was in his body. He made an observation. And so when you talk about that, I feel like that same observation of, right, you're out of your mind. You're not thinking about anything except what the objective is. So how do you bring that into the real world and continue that? Because that's a great thing.
Well, I mean, that's ultimately who I am, right? In the sense that being a minister, I've ministered to people. I remember, and some, like, I try to monitor my stories, because I've been around something so horrific. I've been around things that some people wouldn't be able to deal with.
Yes, and I just want to interrupt you for one second, only because you have been, and that's such an important point. And I know you do monitor your stories, but I want people to understand that you've been technically hell and back, and you are kind and loving and generous human being. So there's no excuse for circumstance, for who, right, for who you've become. You've become amazing.
You are who you surround. Just the short and simple. The reason I am on this call with you is because in my core bottom, like as far down, you just set me on fire. And what I'm going to tell a person is you are who you surround yourself with. You are who you surround yourself with. That is why you're in my life. Now, the law of attraction can be this, or you can intentionally seek to be drawn to certain. I was told in my life, just real quick, the way I got out, I was, oh my God, I was raising up some bad places. And the way I got out was the Bible, hip hop, and the thesaurus. Right? Now that might be a weird mix for some people. But here I am, a minister, studying the Bible and being able to teach it, interpret it. And then I had a gift on top of it. I can't own it all. It came from a place that I don't even know. It just, boom, showed up and I could do it. And so because it's true, you could throw me in and no matter what was around me, I could not do it because it's a gift. So now I had a godmother who was actually our foster parent I'm the oldest of eight children. And so the oldest two, she was our foster mother for about 3 years. She was an improv dynamo. She could just make up anything, any song about anything. And so we were raised with her. And she, you could say, you know, Madea, why is that microphone sitting that way? And then she just make up a gospel song about it that will blow your mind. My brother and I, we would harmonize, and it was just that way. That's what we did in the house. Well, hip hop comes along and is introduced in our world. And I'm this improv person, and I like these guys are rapping and they're doing their thing. And I just opened my mouth and they were like, oh my God. Well, as I continued, with everything, I study it. And so there's a hip hop artist that in his lyrics, he says, no dictionaries necessary to use. Big words do nothing but confuse and lose. So I was like, how am I going to put my rhymes together and use new words, but without the dictionary? I don't even remember when, but somewhere down my path, I was introduced to the thesaurus. And it helped me biblically. It helped me in life. It got me in so much trouble. It got me in so much trouble. Because when the bishop was preaching that when you go to heaven, God has already prepared a mansion for you. Well, Jen, that caused a problem. Because when I looked at, let not thy heart be troubled. Believe in God, believe also in me. For in my Father's house are many mansions. My mind didn't go to there's a mansion waiting on us in heaven. I didn't know I was a critical thinker, but what happened is I thought, why did he just use the same word two times? Because from a thesaurus perspective, Father's house and many mansions, that's the same word. And so as I went through, like, my mind, my consciousness expanded through just reading this book and this book and this book. And so eventually I wanted to be around other smart people.
Yeah.
So even when I was catching hell, so if you look on Maslow's hierarchy of needs, even when I didn't even have my physical needs met, I was looking to meet my cognitive needs, hungry. And I, so now here I am at this stage in life, and I can reach out to 100 similar others.
Right, right. However, but I, you bring up such an important point, and I want you to share it with our listeners. So you said you are who you're surrounded with, but you and I talked about a important point at the beginning. Share with people that this isn't, how is it like-minded? Because you're surrounded by, I want you to give the key for people, because you're surrounded, you're not surrounded by 100 Alanis.
No.
Right? But that's so important, because we tend to surround ourselves with people, right? With like-minded versus diverse. But however, I'll let you give them the key.
Well, qualities I want to kind of add in a bridge too, right? Because
okay.
I said I came from this place and now I'm in this place, and I don't want this to be, for what we would know in our language, a superior posture. But I do want people to be able to get me, to be relatable, and at the same time, understand why I speak so boldly. I come from a background where on my mother's side, my grandfather was born in 1912, and his mother was a slave, right? So for him, it was illegal, it was illegal to learn to read anything. Now, my mom was already raising kids by the time she was 14, because I have twin cousins that I call my big sisters. Their father was living in New York. He came and he just dropped them off on her. Her mother died the same year that she was pregnant with me at 14. And so she just started having children from my dad after that. He was down in Florida from Alabama to get out of trouble, because as a child, he was basically thrown into this jail system where he was a person that sharecropped as punishment for whatever little crime, whatever. So, but he came to get away from trouble. And we lived on the side of town in Jacksonville, Florida, that was kind of the refuge side of town. It was where they slaughtered pigs and chickens and cows. And there, you had a lot of people with mental disorders. It was a bad part of town. And so from this, my mother attempted to get out. She met my stepfather, who was, he was not mentally stable. And so we went through these processes, and I remember living in condemned houses. I remember not eating at night. I laugh about it now and say that I had sleep for dinner more often than I had dinner for dinner. And as tough as it was with my mother around, she ended up going to prison for writing worthless checks. And when she did that, life really went down to a very, very dark place. And my brothers and I, it was six of us at the time, it was two older siblings. It was me, I was like nine. I had a brother, 8 and 1, 7. I had a 4-year-old sister, an 18-month-old brother, and a 6-month-old sister. So my brothers, I called us the older children. We would go to school 2 days and stay home a day. We smelled bad. We were stank because they turned the water off and it was turned back on so many times that they put a big silver bullfrog lock on the water meter. The lights had been turned off and on so many times that they actually took that glass case that comes from the electric company. They took it. No phone, no water, no lights, often no food, right? The place was infested with rodents. And I'm the oldest. My stepfather's drunk somewhere. And if he is there, you pray that he's drunk somewhere because it was brutal. And a lot of times I would step up to the plate if I saw one of my brothers about to be killed, and I would take the punishment. I would take the blow. I would take the brunt over and over and over until one of my uncles showed up just to do a welfare check on us after about 3 or 4 months after my mom was in prison. And when he opened the door, we looked like almost like feral humans.
Sure.
So when you talk about bullying, understand, some people say we were poor and just didn't know it. Jim, we were poor and we knew it.
Yeah.
We didn't know it from our perspective, but we knew it because everybody else told us.
Right.
Our own cousins. I mean, I almost killed one of my cousins one time because they were bullying us. We fought with everybody, to include close family, because we smell so bad. And we would say, oh, that's my cousin. They would say, no, I'm not. And the problem, I'm not your cousin. Boom. But what happens to you after you fight over and over and over? You become a hardened tank.
Right.
And so, they would tell jokes. The joke was, did you saw that movie that was on last night? No, what movie? Soap and Water. And everybody would bust out laughing. They would take advantage of the fact that you were a neglected child and you were innocent and didn't kind of know, you're naive. And so one guy who was like, let me show you this little trick. I was like, okay. He took an eraser and he erased my skin down to the white meat. I had that scar on me for almost 20 years. So I understand what it means to be bullied and pushed around. And on the other side, I know what it's like to sit in first class on that flight when I don't have the amount of miles necessary to have me in that seat, and the guy who's coming down does, and that dirty look he gives me. Can you go to camera? Go to camera. That dirty look he gives me. So I know what it's like to have privilege. And I study that. I study that word. And when other people hate it, I know that I have class privilege often when I don't have race privilege. And sometimes I face evil eyes and looks and conversations on the side of the room when nobody hears because a person perceives they have race privilege over me. I was walking in the store in Alaska and a guy came down the aisle. Now I'm a nurse, right? And I've been working there. He knows exactly who I am. He looks around to make sure nobody is watching and excuse my language here. But he said, you know what? You're lucky no one's taking a shot at your black ass. And he keeps walking, Jan. I know exactly who he is. I know exactly what he's driving. But I also know if I trip that wire of violence in no man's land and start a war with this guy, in a place like Bethel, every man is 10 men. Yeah. Every person is 10 people, to include me. You don't know what else I'm patched over into, what else I'm patched. So for us, it's almost like giants to make anything, it would be like giants going to war.
Sure, sure.
But I understand what it means to have privilege. I understand what it means for people to almost wish that you would just die because you don't represent anything in the human kind of strata.
It's on their perspective. Standards. Yeah.
But what I did was I wanted to get myself to a place in life that when I'm reaching out, I'm not trying to bring in things that are exactly like me. I'm trying to bring in facets. So because I love to talk about philosophy, I have one person in my life that I can make a phone call to right now and talk about philosophy till our eyes bleed. I have another person we can talk about the Bible until we're talking about Perez begat Imram. And what does that really mean? Wait. No. Let's go back and let's look at that and see what that really means. Let's look at Cain and Abel and Tubal-Cain and their descent. Like, I have someone in my life for that. I have someone in my life if I want to talk about nutrition and the science of nutrition and the gut biome. But they're also different and they're all me.
Yeah. Yeah. But that you said it perfectly. And that's what we need. We need to surround ourselves with, when we say like-minded, I for me, that means that you're willing to be open. You're willing to see others' perspectives. You're willing to meet people where they are. You're not coming from a superior place. You're human to human, right? You're not perfect, but love leads you most of the time, right? So those are the qualities versus when we say find like-minded people, my group doesn't look like me. My group, you're in my group, you know, and we don't look like each other, but we're coming from a place of wanting to learn, of wanting to grow, of wanting to be better, right? Of wanting to put more love out into this world, to give value to people. So I think that's just such an important distinction for our listeners that you got to get out there and see things from others' perspectives. And
we kind of talking about bullying. And again, there's so many different ways I can go with this.
Sure.
Just kind of like, again, from a spiritual perspective, I remember reading the story of Elisha and Elijah.
Yeah.
And when Elijah was in the cave and was told to go down and commission Elisha to take his place, he was the 12th man, the 12th yoke of oxen on a 12 yoke team. Like there were 11 others in front of him, which meant his work was easy. Right. Because all of the hard stuff was done. But then as oxen move forward, they often leave a waste product behind. And so although it was easy, he was in the waste. And so with that, I want to segue to say that when Elijah met him, he said, you know what? I'm done with this. I am out. I'm out. I'm out. I'm following you, sir. Wherever you go, whatever. And he was like, what are you talking about? Get back over there. To look at it, you would understand that an ox is a dumb thing. It's strong. It's powerful. It will get you where you want to go, but it's dumb. Mm-hmm. And so just like an ox, when you look at a bull is a force. It's a power. And it's coming from a place. It's coming from certainty, right? And scarcity at the same time. There's some fear in there, but I know if I just do it this way, I can maintain my status quo. That works. The only problem is that the bull in bully is a dumb thing.
I love that. I love that. You know, we skipped commercials today because I just didn't want to break us up. We have, we're down to our last 30 seconds, but you know what? You ended it perfectly. Cause I was going to ask you to end it, but you read my mind and you're right. I mean, it's dumb.
It's yeah. Not to kind of be a salesman, but I'm working on a project right now called Hot Topic. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to release 6 different hot topics that are relative to what we're facing today. Different things from different perspectives. I have some other people who want me to do blogcasts and vlogcasts with them. So the world will be hearing more from me. And Jen, I want you on my show to talk about some things because I want to get to know you better on a personal level.
Yeah, right? For sure.
Similar like this, but I just want to get you on and interview you and get that goodie out because there's people like you that are really, really influencing and changing the world.
I appreciate that. And likewise to you, my friend, I want people to hear more about you. Where can people find you? Should they just go to Facebook and look you up on Facebook?
Just find me on Facebook. At Lonnie, I think it's something, I don't know how to, I'll tell you what, I'll tag it, I'll put it on wherever you list this. You can find me on Facebook as Lonnie Holly. There are 3 of us. Whichever one you find, you're going to find a treat. Got my dad, myself, and my son. My father's a renowned artist. And whatever level of brilliance you might see in me, awesome. I'm following something. Then you'll find myself and my son. But I'm ready to engage. I love people. And I love talking about subjects that expand our consciousness.
I do too. All right, my friend. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jen.
You have been listening to Thrive by Jen Radio on Transformation Talk Radio.
Thank you for listening to Thrive by Jen Radio on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Tune in live each Monday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern, as Jen shares the action steps and real stories from people throughout the country that will ignite you to stand in confidence, love from within, and be unstoppable at fulfilling your dreams. For more information, podcast downloads, and to connect with Jen, visit jenniferzelop.com.